Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. My co-host Anthony Brooks is out this week. You know the old Robert Frost poem, Mending Fences, and that famous Frostian proverb, good fences make good neighbors. It's that point of amused pride about the rough-hewn, each-man-for-himself mentality in the stereotypical flinty New Englander. But Frost was onto something, and perhaps not in the best way, because by another measure of neighborliness, Massachusetts ranks near the bottom of American states. 48th, to be exact, when it comes to the percentage of discretionary income residents give away to philanthropies and charities. 48th. Well, that's according to a new study called How America Gives by the Chronicle of Philanthropy. Question is, when we peer behind the numbers, what exactly do we see? Well, joining us now from Washington is Stacey Palmer, editor of the Chronicle of Philanthropy. Stacey Palmer, welcome to Radio Boston.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Great.
Thanks so much for joining us today. So let me ask you, first and foremost, you did a national study about giving. It's called How America Gives. Roughly speaking, how did the various parts of the country shake out when it comes to philanthropic giving?
One of the things we found was that it was the Bible Belt states that gave the most and the New England states that gave the least. And that's because religion is such an important factor in determining how much people give. So I think you can really see that playing out in our numbers.
And so tell us a little bit more about that. When you say religion plays an important factor by how much?
It's in different ways. So one measure is certainly how much people give to their own congregations. And certainly one of the reasons we see Utah at the top and Salt Lake City and some of the other Utah cities rank very highly, coming up with 14 or 15% of discretionary income given, is because of the Mormon tradition of tithing, which is very strong. So people are encouraged to give 10% of their income away, and we can see that in the numbers. But what also happens, some researchers have found, is that people who are religious also tend to give to other causes more generously than people who aren't so religious. And so I think that affects the numbers, too. So it's not just about, people who give to their churches or continuing to give there, but they're also giving to other causes.
Mm. I note from the report, to put some specific numbers on it, that you say donors in southern states, for instance, give roughly 5% of discretionary income to charity. But then when you remove religion and just look at secular giving, that number in the South, in the Bible Belt, as you noted, drops to 0.9%. So that's that difference that you're talking about there.
Absolutely. And then when you see it in the Northeast, that's where the Northeast actually does very well and gives 1.4% of income, which is more than any of the other regions of the country. So that's why I think religion is playing a really strong role in how Massachusetts is doing.
Hmm. And let me also ask you, in the report, in the sort of initial materials given out for the report, the Chronicle of Philanthropy sort of framed it in this red states give more than blue states dichotomy. Now, is that true, and why do you say that?
We ranked the states by red states versus blue states and put their generosity level next to them and found that indeed the red states are very high up in the generosity level of discretionary income given and the blue states are low. And I think that has to do a bit with political philosophy about the belief that government should be doing more versus charity. If you believe that charities are the ones that should take care of the neediest, then you're more inclined to give. And I think certainly we see in tradition of other states that it's not that people don't want to help the needy, but they think that that's government's role.
Mm. And so far we've been talking about one primary measure by which you've come to these conclusions, and that is the percentage of discretionary income. Is that right?
Absolutely. And we looked at that so that it would be a fairer measure. Looking after people paid their taxes, after they've paid their basic necessities in life, what do they have left over, and then how much do they give?
Because I looked, we were very curious about this study, and it's a remarkable one. And on the Chronicle of Philanthropy website, there's wonderful interactives that you've set up that sort of delve into the numbers in more detail. And when I looked at it today, for example, here in Massachusetts, as we pointed out earlier, when it comes to the percent of discretionary income that people give on average, the state ranks 48th, and that's a 2.8% of discretionary income. And then when you looked at the median dollar value of median giving, Massachusetts also ranks 48th for about an average of $1,600 per year. But then, interestingly, when you look at the total dollars contributed overall, and you amass all those individual gifts together, Massachusetts jumps to 14th in the nation. Collectively, residents in the state gave $3.1 billion. So what does that tell you about who's giving?
One of the things that we saw in the data was variations in how much the poorest people we looked at gave and the very richest. And certainly in Massachusetts, one of the things we saw that people with incomes of $200,000 and up were indeed quite generous and more so than that average amount. And people who gave, who are in the $50,000 to $75,000 bracket also gave generously. It's people who are in that $100,000 to $200,000 income category, and we're looking at a household when we say that, who weren't giving quite so much. And so I think that that's where perhaps there's more potential for people to be able to give a little more in those income levels.
I want to explore that more in just a moment, but I also want to throw out some questions to our listeners who are tuned in right now. We're talking about the Chronicle of Philanthropy's new report on how America gives, and that by one measure, New England doesn't, or maybe doesn't give all that much. And we're sort of taking a look at those numbers and asking what that means. So listeners, are you surprised that Massachusetts and much of the Northeast rank kind of low when it comes to one measure of generosity? Does it make sense to you or not? Where and how and to whom do you give away your money? And what do you make of the theory that you heard a little earlier that there's a red state, blue state divide when it comes to philanthropy? And is that a useful distinction or a harmful one? Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. Stacey Palmer, take us into, the geeky part of me wants to hear just a little bit about how you gathered these data, because I understand that it came from an examination of 2008 IRS tax returns. Is that right?
Exactly. And the IRS releases that information. And unfortunately, that is the most recent year that's available. So we took their data and you're able to look at it zip code by zip code to be able to see what the giving rates really are. Now, in really tiny areas, the IRS doesn't release that information because they don't want anybody to be able to figure out that one wealthy person lives in this particular area. But you can pretty much look zip code by zip code and see what's really going on. So we use that information, and you mentioned the interactive online that we have. So you can just plug in your zip code and see how generous your neighborhood is, not just your city or state. And we're talking a lot about those city and state rankings, but you can look really specifically at how your community is giving.
All right. And there's actually quite a bit of detail there. The closer down you bore into the numbers. I am curious, though, 2008 was not a great year. I mean, that's like the understatement of the day in terms of the economy. So if we're taking a snapshot of income tax return data from that year, are we really getting a realistic picture about, this issue of philanthropic giving? I mean, people were losing their jobs left and right, and lots of people just didn't have any income to give away.
Absolutely. We worried about that a lot when we looked at the data. And one of the things we realized was that, relatively speaking, everybody was facing that same boat. So when you're looking at, one part of the country versus another, certainly you have to look at the economic factors, but that it was a fair measure and it is the best available data that we had. So, and we have done this study once before using 1997 data, and we found a lot of similarities. And that's one of the reasons that made us comfortable that we were getting, some decent results to be able to see that some of the same patterns were there. In some parts of the country, efforts have been made to ratchet up giving. When our first report came out, especially the city of Austin really took offense at the fact that they were very low in the giving ranks, and they made a very determined effort to be able to increase giving. They started a magazine that covers charities, and they moved up the ranks by really making a push on that kind of thing. Mm. So, you know, I hear your point about 2008, and it's one we were concerned about, but we think it's a pretty fair measure.
Yeah. Well, you've also done some closer examination of other particular cities, including Providence in Rhode Island. That is a city that's undergone a long-term economic transformation, and not always for the better. So can you tell us what you discovered about Providence?
Absolutely. One of the things we did was talk to a lot of fundraisers there about some of the challenges that they face, and they say that they really have to work extraordinarily hard to be able to persuade people to give. And it's for a lot of reasons. It's in part big companies have moved away, and that means that corporate giving is down, and it also means that people don't have jobs, and so they're not working in those same kinds of positions. So when you've got high unemployment rates, people aren't obviously going to be able to give. As a matter of fact, they're the ones that need charity. The problems that the state government has faced is also affecting things. So it's really a pretty tough time in Providence. But one of the things that people talked about there wasn't just the economy, but also that Yankee frugality and a sense of independence. And that, you know, one of the things they have to work against is the idea that we all have to join together to solve problems, and that sometimes it takes putting in a lot of money to be able to do that.
Mm. You know, this idea of Yankee frugality, as you know, you heard in the introduction, I was quoting Robert Frost as well. But it seems to have got a lot of people around here really talking about, you know, are we or aren't we generous? And so we reached out to the Boston College Center on Wealth and Philanthropy, that is an institution here in town that's actually done quite a bit of similar research about who gives. And they actually came out with some rather different results. They looked at, for example, when they were looking at in the top 5% of income earners in the region, they looked at Federal Reserve data, and they found that those top 5% of folks are actually giving 40% of all the charitable dollars given, which is somewhat or almost exactly similar to, you know, the amount of income tax paid.
Mm-hmm.
And they also found that when you control for taxes and you really make cost of living adjusted to the specifics within individual states, the ranking when it comes to who's giving what state by state is actually much more mixed. It's not blue states giving less than red states. I guess the point is that, you know, as you well know, being the head of the Chronicle of Philanthropy, that cost of living in a place like Boston is a lot higher than elsewhere. And the middle class feels very, very squeezed when its houses are so expensive and they got to save every last dollar they can for retirement and for, you know, putting their kids through college. So when we say discretionary income, it kind of means different things in different areas. So I guess what's your response to that in terms of what it means for philanthropy?
We did look at the cost of living because it wouldn't be fair to be able to measure generosity rates without doing that and looking at tax rates. So we subtracted all of that out and looked at discretionary income. One of the things that the Boston College study does that's excellent is that it comes up with a projection of people who don't itemize on their tax mm-hmm. returns. And that's one of the challenges of doing a study like that is we really don't know what certain people are giving. And so they've come up with a formula and a great estimate that is research that they do. And that's one of the reasons you see Massachusetts going up on the ranking. So, you know, that's another way to look at it. We felt it was better to look at the actual tax records and be able to see that. But, you know, I think it's important if people are concerned about this issue to look at both studies. And I hope that more people will look at this issue. You would think that there's just sort of one answer here, but there's not. We've gotten loads of suggestions from people about whether we should include religious giving, not include religious giving, include volunteerism as a measure of people's giving. You know, there are lots of different ways to look at generosity. And so I think we've just found one slice of it.
Right. And as just a little coda to that, the Boston College Center on Wealth and Philanthropy, in one of their studies, they found that Massachusetts, actually, they rank Massachusetts at 11 and Boston at number four or five regarding urban areas. So you're right. When you look at the data in different ways, you find different things. And I want to, in a minute or two, talk to you about what this means overall regarding this idea of American generosity and for philanthropic organizations. But we've got a couple callers who want to join us, so I'd like to welcome them in. Dean's calling from Hyde Park. You're on the air, Dean.
Hi, this was really more of a question earlier in the conversation. I'm glad that mention was made of the cost of living differences between, say, New England and other parts of the country, because I think that this is this information has to be figured in when you look at rates of philanthropic giving. Otherwise, you're just left with a stereotype of this sort of stingy, flinty New Englander. So I'm glad that that was brought in. It came into the conversation later, but I'm glad that it did enter the conversation. So.
Dean, thank you so much for the call. Stacey Palmer, that question about are there differences in different regions or within states?
Oh, there are differences all over the place. One of the reasons it's sort of fun to look at the zip code levels is you can see, you know, bordering areas being really different from one another. And so some of it is about the power of the charities to raise money, get their message out. And some of it goes back to the religion thing that we were talking about before, because by that measure, different communities look really different. And I think if we did a ranking that was just of secular giving, we'd have a very different picture of how the states stack up.
Mm. Let's hear from Caroline, who's calling from Newton. You're on the air, Caroline.
Hi. I am calling because I feel that when I have money that I can give, I give some to my church, but I give more to the political candidates that I think will help people because I think that you have to help people on a grand scale. For example, Pell Grants. Young people need Pell Grants to go to college. And so if I give to a candidate that supports them instead of who is trying to lower them, like in the current race, Republicans versus Democrats, I prefer to give to the candidates. Pell Grants, food stamps, health care, training programs, those kinds of things. I try to ascertain which candidates are doing more to help people have the foundation where they can support themselves and do better and bring themselves up. It's the whole adage about if you give a person a fish, like through a religious organization, you feed them for a day, but if you give them education and training and health, then you feed them for a lifetime because mm-hmm. they can get a job and be self-sufficient. So that's why I think that, you know, some of the more liberal states in the Northeast, people like me give a lot of money to candidates that support those values that I think are altruistic. And so I'd like to know what you have to say about it. And also I think that's backed up a bit by the fact that in Massachusetts people give more money on discretionary income that's not religious because, and maybe this might be one of the reasons, although I have no idea statistically.
Caroline, you raise actually a bunch of interesting points, and I'd like to go through them step by step with Stacey Palmer. Stacey, thank you so much for your call, Caroline. Stacey, this actually gets us back to something you said earlier, and that is actually just core differences in attitudes in terms of what group may be the most powerful charitable force, and that maybe some regions of the country see government as, you know, it's better for me to give my money to government because that may have a larger overall impact.
Absolutely. And, you know, that's a very valid way of looking at things. And I think one of the things we're seeing, certainly in this election, where we're seeing more money going into these independent political groups, we're seeing really big money going on from a lot of philanthropists who believe that they would be better off changing the way the government works than they would be giving to charity. So I think that that's something we're really seeing being played out in a huge way right now, and we're going to see even more of it.
Right. You know, it's very interesting to me because not that I'm equating taxes and charitable giving. I am not doing that. But, you know, when it comes to an individual giving money to another organization, be that the federal government or a charitable cause, for example, in the Northeast states, including New York and then also out west in California, I mean, these are, you know, quote unquote blue states that year after year basically give a net transfer of tax dollars from them to the southern states. I mean, for example, California, Connecticut, Illinois, New Jersey, and New York, for every $1 that they give to the federal government, they receive $0.8 in return. So it's a different way of looking at moving money around between organizations and states. But I am curious, Stacey Palmer, you're editor of the Chronicle of Philanthropy. So ultimately, your audience, aside from interested Radio Boston listeners and everyone who read the media around this report, are your fellow philanthropic organizations. And what lessons are they to draw from the conclusions you have in this report?
One of the most important things is that good fundraising really does matter, and getting the message out. And so, you know, one of the things that has disturbed me a little bit about the sort of generous versus stingy comparisons is I don't think it's really about that. I think it's about people who have heard a message from a charity that they felt moved to make a gift. And in some states, some people may be better at that. That may be one of the reasons that, you know, religious groups are very good at being able to raise money. They see people every Sunday and pass it along the collection plate. Those are the kinds of things that encourage giving in a way that maybe is tougher in some of these other places. So I think the main message is that it's really important for charities to get the word about out about what they do and about what they do with their money. I think some people are a little bit skeptical about what goes on with charitable contributions and sort of how you best solve problems. So that's the major thing that we've seen. We've also seen, though, that tax policy makes a big difference. In Arizona, for example, they have lots of credits that people can get. So that's more generous than a tax deduction. And that encourages people to give to specific kinds of causes. So another lesson for charities is to study those kinds of things and see whether they want to lobby their lawmakers to pass more of those kinds of credits to encourage people to give.
Mm. I suppose another lesson is also really know the profile of who gives in your region, in your city, in your state, because it takes me back to this idea that Massachusetts is 48th when it comes to percent of discretionary income, but 14th when it comes to total giving. So there are some people who are giving a lot of money here. I mean, same thing in California. There are lots of blue states in the top five when it comes to total giving, according to your numbers. California, number one, New York, number two, Florida, okay, swing state, number four, Illinois, number five. So, you know who's who's prone to give.
Precisely. And that's one of the reasons we created this interactive. We really wanted to help give people tools to be able to target their fundraising efforts a little bit better and know more about their donors. So that's the way we hope that charities will use it.
Hmm. Well, listeners, we'll have links to the Chronicle of Philanthropy's report and those interactives at our website, along with links to other reports from the Boston College Center on Wealth and Philanthropy Research and their own data on generosity and giving here in New England. Stacey Palmer is the editor of the Chronicle of Philanthropy. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
And listeners, you know how we started off that segment, we quoting Robert Frost and good fences make good neighbors? Well, I just note that buried in that poem is also this subtle notion that those neighbors may have had a wall between them, but ultimately they mended the wall together. So there's another thought about what it means to be neighbors in New England. Well, stay with us because up next, Boston's Humanitarian of the Year and Boston's International Musician of the Year, Mamadou Diop. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.